This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations. If you thought Donald Trump would take a bit of a break from his business of making money while president of a country of 300 plus million people, think again. There are dozens of new ventures in the works under the umbrella of Trump's businesses, some of which actually don't bear his name brand. Trump has simply claimed that there are no ethical and financial conflicts between running a country and running such a major business because he has put his holdings in a so-called blind trust. But the president recently made changes to the trust to allow him to withdraw funds whenever he wanted. And it's not just Trump. His daughter Ivanka and many of his own cabinet members also face ethics concerns and possible conflicts of interests with their businesses. Indeed, the Trump administration may be the wealthiest and most enmeshed in corporate America that we've ever seen. My guest is Derek Kravitz. He is the research editor at ProPublica, former reporter and editor for the Greater New York section of the Wall Street Journal, and former national economics writer for the Associated Press in Washington, D.C. He's been writing about these issues for ProPublica. Welcome to the program, Derek.
Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about what it means by what Donald Trump means when he uses the term blind trust.
So a blind trust, in actuality, means that you have a trust and it's controlled by an independent trustee who manages the day-to-day operations of that trust and the disbursements of money that comes into it. What President Trump has is not a blind trust. It's a half-blind trust or a not-blind trust. Essentially, it's run by his eldest son and his longtime attorney at the Trump Organization, and they can manage on a day-to-day basis, but the money from it, the proceeds and the profits and, the principal, can go back up to the president at any time.
So these changes that he apparently made to his blind trust allows him to withdraw any amount of money from that trust at any time?
Yes.
Why is that problematic?
So he made sure that it was codified in this trust document that was released that he could receive any profits and or principal from any of his businesses at any time. So this means that essentially if a business is doing well, he will see that this business is doing well and it will appear in his checking or brokerage account or what have you. The problem with this arrangement, at least in the eyes of ethics experts and attorneys on both sides of the aisle, both Democrat and Republican, is that it leads to a potential conflicts of interest. So if a golf course or a hotel is doing really well in one area and it has an intersection with federal business, with a tax subsidy, with some sort of legislation, and the president, sitting president, is benefiting from it, it presents a very real-world conflict there. And we haven't seen all of the conflicts that could arise yet.
And so basically Trump could make political decisions that directly benefit him. I mean, why wouldn't he? It's not as though, first of all, there's nothing actually stopping him from doing so, right? And his personality has shown that Trump looks out for nobody but Trump.
Well, so what we try to do at ProPublica, we're nonpartisan. We're strictly investigative and public service oriented journalism. So really, we try to separate out the intent and show what is currently happening. But at the end of the day, the president of the United States, who is a public official, the highest public official in this country, can benefit from his privately held businesses. And we, as the American public, won't know exactly how much he's making and how he's benefiting from these deals, and if his deals are essentially profiting off of the presidency. And that can create very real world problems.
What about the fact that it's his own son overseeing this blind trust? I mean, all he has to do is have dinner with his son, and any conversation between them, if it's not recorded, we would never know about.
Right. So a blind trust strictly means that it's an independent trustee, someone outside of the Trump family or the Trump organization that's running it. So this is not a blind trust. This is his eldest son, Donald Jr., that's running it with Alan Weisselberg, the Trump organization attorney. Eric, another son, is an advisor for the trust. So there's no separation really from the Trump family and the president of the United States. If they were abiding by even what the Independent Office of Government Ethics, which is an independent government agency, has prescribed, they would have created a strictly blind trust to deal with this. And every president going back to Jimmy Carter has created a variant of this.
Right, Jimmy Carter and his peanut farm, which in
Yes.
comparison to Trump's riches really does appear like peanuts. Derek, let's talk about the financial disclosures of at least a big number of Trump cabinet members that the White House made recently. Your organization, ProPublica, together with New York Times and Associated Press, has published these. How did you get a hold of these documents and how comprehensive are they?
So the White House General Counsel's office made it very difficult to obtain these documents. And this is not a Trump administration unique problem. This is a government bureaucracy problem in the sense that they cannot proactively disclose a lot of these things for the public to digest. So you have to request these individual documents on each White House staffer that has filed a federal financial disclosure form. So we went ahead and tried to identify the 180 officials that would be subject to this and request individually each form. With the New York Times and the Associated Press, we created a public Google Drive folder so that we could post all of these documents there, and then the public could in turn look at them and see what's what.
Were you surprised by seeing the worth of some of these cabinet members? And of course, among them is the president's own daughter and son-in-law.
Right. I don't think anyone was terribly surprised by the sheer enormity of the wealth of the Trump administration and his cabinet. I think people were maybe surprised by some of the financial connections between some of the Trump administration officials and, say, the Mercers, who are Republican donors, and Steve Bannon, or the sheer enormity of Jared Kushner's Kushner Company's empire, or Ivanka Trump's the amount of money that her eponymous clothing and apparel brand brings in, the value of it being upwards of $50 million. So I think the details were very important to people, and we're still getting disclosures. We only received maybe more than 80 thus far, and there's 180 total that we're looking to get.
And of course, notably absent is the president himself and his vice president, Mike Pence, which shouldn't surprise us given that Donald Trump has, of course, refused to release his own tax returns. These financial disclosures, we're unlikely to get those of the president himself, right?
So the president does not have to file another financial disclosure until March or maybe May 2018. He filed two as a political candidate, and as a new entrant to government, he doesn't have to file another one this year.
I see.
Now, precedent shows that, you know, President Obama did actually file one voluntarily. So he could have done that, but obviously he's not required to do so. So we have another year, more than a year, to wait for his next disclosure.
Let's talk about Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. Ivanka Trump recently announced that she would be joining the White House staff, I believe not necessarily getting paid, but officially joining the White House staff in order to undermine any claims of financial impropriety. However, she is very much associated with her own brand, which is very much a lucrative brand. What are some of the issues and disentanglements that we need to understand for the president's daughter?
Well, with Jared Kushner, her husband's federal financial disclosure, we actually saw a slice of Ivanka Trump's assets and some of the potential conflicts there within. So she will have to file a disclosure herself now that she's a federal employee. And some of this was in, like you mentioned, in response to criticism that she was essentially an unpaid volunteer who was performing some of the official White House duties of a staffer, but not subject to any of the requirements of one. Now she's essentially codifying that and working in the White House and will be subject to all the rules and regulations there. So in effect, it is a positive development if you're looking at it through the lens of disclosure, through accountability, and through essentially figuring out what someone is doing in the White House and their roles and responsibilities. Because if someone has a paid, or in this case, maybe paid job that she defers the salary to someone else or some other entity, she will have defined roles and responsibilities. And as the public, we will actually be able to figure out what she's doing and what she's tasked with.
So joining the staff now requires that her financial holdings also be disclosed?
Exactly.
So it's just a matter of time.
Right. So on Wednesday, last Wednesday, she started the process of filling out that federal financial disclosure. But it takes a while for that to actually go through the system. So she has 30 days to actually fill out the form. And then she's can actually wait 2 45-day extensions to send it to the White House counsel's office. Then they have another 60 days in which to certify it. So it can take some time.
Now, from what I understand, and some of these financial documents are a little complicated, but I understand that Kushner, Jared Kushner, and his wife Ivanka Trump are together worth something like on the order of $700 million.
So the range in which the problem with these forms is that they weren't necessarily built for high net worth individuals. They were designed to make sure that
Government isn't designed for high net worth individuals, but yes, anyway, go ahead.
the ranges are very large when you're describing an asset or income. And in fact, it cuts off at 50 million. So anything beyond that is not necessarily accounted, and that's a problem when you're evaluating someone like Jared Kushner or Gary Cohn or someone that could have upwards of 740 or $1 billion respectively. So the range in which Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump together collectively, it's up to $741 million, but it could be much, much lower. The problem is we don't know exactly what, and a lot of their holdings are privately held. And as a privately held company, you're not subject to the same reporting requirements with the SEC that you are as a publicly traded company.
One of the people whose forms were released, whose financial holdings were that you did get a hold of, is Steve Bannon, the controversial chief strategist associated with Breitbart News. He is richer than I expected him to be. It turns out that he has connections with the billionaire Robert Mercer, who has also been linked to Trump. Tell us about what we now know about of Bannon's earnings and his worth.
So we didn't know the specifics. We knew that he was tied to Mercer-funded entities, but we didn't know how much. So last year in 2016, he made $500,000 in salary from Mercer-linked entities, including the nonprofit Government Accountability Institute, a film production company called Glittering Steel, obviously Breitbart News Network. So that was new, and then we also didn't know that he made somewhere between 1.3 and $2.3 million in salary and fees last year, and we didn't know his assets as well. I think people were a new revelation was essentially the new financial connections between him and the Mercer family.
Any potential ethics violations or possible conflicts of interest that you can see there?
He has divested from both Glittering Steel and one other Mercer-linked entity. He resigned his position with Breitbart News. One thing that these forms require is that you fill them out accurately. He said on the forms that he resigned from Breitbart News in August, and Breitbart folks said that it actually wasn't until November. These little things add up. And if someone calls attention to them, then you have to file amended forms, and the Office of Government Ethics takes this very seriously. They have prosecuted people in the past for willfully omitting information on these forms. Now, this probably wouldn't rise to that, but again, that's why we ask for the public's help in looking at these documents and making sure that the information in there is accurate, because some of these federal agencies, obviously the White House Counsel's Office, which is run by the Trump administration, and the Office of Government Ethics, they're not compliance or enforcement agencies. They have compliance officers that will look through these documents and assure generally their accuracy, but they're not going to go through and make sure that every dollar amount is correct. So that's why it's worth looking at them and sharing them with the public.
Gary Cohn is another person whose financial holdings were disclosed, whose forms you got a hold of, the former Goldman Sachs investment banker, now the head of the National Economic Council. This is, Goldman Sachs very much, not fitting the description of the swamp draining that Trump had promised. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars as well, right?
Yes, arguably the richest person, along with potentially, in the cabinet, Irina Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary,
Right.
a 79-year-old billionaire, and perhaps Betsy DeVos, the Education Department Secretary.
So
But
together,
Gary.
this is a club of millionaires and billionaires. Has Cohn divested himself from any business potential
Yes.
conflicts of interest?
He's significantly divested and sold a substantial amount of shares in his stocks. But this is required. So the White House Counsel's Office, when you submit these filings, they also engage in a type of ethics agreement negotiation with the person entering government. So it's required that he do this.
So it's required of him, but it's not required of our president.
So the president is not, and the vice president are not subject to conflict of interest criminal penalties that other officials are. This was a change that was made, I believe, in the 1970s, because the theory was that the president and the vice president have such wide purview over so many different areas of national policy that they shouldn't, they would basically touch everything and connect with everything. And so there's no feasible way in which you could enforce a conflict of interest statute by way of criminal penalty with the president and the vice president. So
Wow.
no, President Trump is correct in saying that the president and vice president can't have a conflict of interest, but the addendum there is from criminal penalties.
So let's talk about the fact that business is booming for Trump, and there are plans for brand new hotel chains, the Scion hotel chain, which doesn't even bear the Trump brand, which is really interesting. I mean, as the person who's in charge of, running a country of 300 million plus people is, under so much scrutiny, he isn't holding back. He isn't even putting on hold his business ventures. What do we know about the growth of the Trump business? And again, these are so problematic on so many on so many levels, given that the president makes political decisions all the time, international political decisions in countries where he has businesses. So how is it expanding?
So that's an interesting question and an open question. Because these businesses are privately held, like I mentioned, and each entity is essentially spun off and an independent business entity for each venture, we don't know the exact details of what the Trump Organization is doing with every new project under the Scion brand, like you mentioned. For example, there's a new hotel that's potentially underway in Dallas under the Scion brand with investors and backers that come from multiple different countries, including Kazakhstan and elsewhere. But we don't know much more about this other than the good local reporting done in Dallas by the local business journal. So until we find documentation that attests to the plans for this new hotel that hasn't even started yet, and it appears to be no paperwork yet, we simply don't know. And so these are things that good journalists, local and regional, will have to follow, and then the nationals will have to pick up.
It's just amazing to think about these conversations that we're having, the amounts of money involved. Derek, is it important for us to point out that this administration is so wealthy that, Trump, who pointed out, and I know you're a nonpartisan organization, so you can't really comment on political parties, but is it, as far as I can tell, this is the wealthiest cabinet, presidential cabinet we've seen in US history? It's hard to sort of find those numbers, and I know there has to be adjustments for inflation, et cetera, but what do you know about the unprecedented wealth amassed in
Sure.
the White House by people involved in the White House?
The Washington Post did a great analysis using the financial disclosures that just came out and earlier financial disclosures of the cabinet picks, and they found 2.7 billion, or actually more, amongst some of the highest-ranking officials that President Trump has named, and it does not only present questions about sort of their vantage point and their experience and their background, especially on particular matters that they have now purview over. But it leads to sort of larger, I guess, philosophical questions about wealth and wealth disparity. And but you know, those are very complex questions that the public sort of needs to grapple with. And the most important thing to keep in mind is that these officials have shaped national policy, have the ear of the President of the United States, and are decision makers. So we need to really judge them on their policies.
Right. I assume ProPublica.org is the best place to read your writings, Derek.
Yes, that is.
We'll post a link to that from our site later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Derek Kravitz, research editor at ProPublica and former reporter and editor for the Greater New York section of the Wall Street Journal, former national economics writer for AP in Washington, D.C. He writes for ProPublica about some of these issues we've been discussing. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.